Hello and welcome to The Art of Imagination with Tess from Jagged Edge Arts. Today I'll be speaking with Welsh-English bilingual actor Sean Alan Davis, who, if you like crime dramas, you'll know as Detective Owen Vaughn from the crime noir series Kreith, aka Hidden, which was my first exposure to Welsh language media, which is currently a major personal passion. Anybody who knows me will tell you that. They're making such great shows in that country right now, and Kreith is just phenomenal. It ran for 3 seasons and is one of many great shows that's come out of Wales in Welsh and or a mix of Welsh and English over the last decade. More recently, he's played Jamie in the 6-part murder mystery Cleddai, aka The One That Got Away, which I won't say much about because it's got a lot of fun twists and turns, and I don't want to spoil anything, but it was very gripping, and I really recommend it. He was also the creepiest cast member of the Welsh folk horror film The Feast, and this year he joined the cast of the intense prison drama Bariai for its 2nd season, which has just been released on Amazon and Acorn TV under the English title Inside. He plays a very fun but shady new senior corrections officer who comes in to clean up the problem wing, maybe not with the best tactics or results. It's a great show. If you haven't seen these series, they're very good, really draw you in, really easy to binge, so do check them out. He's been in a lot of other shows and films as well, playing a great range of characters over the years, and I have enjoyed so many of his performances. So, Sean, welcome and thank you. It's so great to have you here today.
Oh, thank you so much.
Look, I've been binging all things Welsh lately, and I'm seeing you in half the shows I put on, which has been a lot of fun. So I saw Kreith, or for English viewers, Hidden.
Yeah.
It was such a great show. I was hooked from the opening scene, but I have to admit, I had no idea Welsh was such an active language.
Yeah. You'd be surprised.
I actually speak Irish Gaelic.
Do you actually?
Yeah.
Amazing. I was in Cork 2 weeks ago, and not many people speak it. It's more like West Coast, isn't it?
West and North in particular, I think, though really in very specific regions. It's so uncommon, unfortunately. Mm. I wish it was spoken more.
Yeah. What made you learn Gaelic?
Funny enough, I learned it in film school. I had a choice of taking either German or Irish. Those were the 2 languages that fit into my schedule. And I've always loved Gaelic. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to study Irish. I don't care that there's nobody around here to speak it with. I want to learn it.
Yeah.
And I did.
Wow.
Unfortunately, it's just so rare. And I guess I just assumed Welsh was similar in that sense to the other Celtic languages.
It is funny you say that you didn't know there was a Welsh language, because you'd be surprised how many people in the UK still don't know.
Mm.
My partner, she is from Rochdale near Manchester, and she's learnt Welsh. She's
Oh, wow.
Been learning Welsh for 5 years. It's incredible. She's basically fluent now, which is amazing.
Yeah.
Considering it has no link to the English language historically or linguistically. But the other day we were on the train and we were speaking Welsh to each other, and the man opposite was looking at us for the journey. He was like, he's speaking a Scandinavian language. We're like, no, he's speaking Welsh. And it's not in the education system in England.
Right.
They're
yeah.
not taught about Welsh, or apart from the signs that you see on the you know, Cymru neu Araf on the roads. But it's not part of the education system. And I think, you know, minority languages in the UK or native languages of Great Britain should be at least taught at some point.
They should be, you would think. I knew that Welsh existed, but,
yeah.
you know, I also knew Manx existed. I didn't know it was actively spoken by a lot of people, to the point where you'd have a whole channel and be making mainstream shows in that language, which I think is amazing.
Yeah.
Did you grow up speaking it? I mean, what is your background with Welsh? Because you're from Cardiff, right?
From Cardiff, yeah.
Do they speak it much there? I always figured big city, it would be less common.
Yeah, the capital. Yeah, so my parents speak Welsh. I went to Welsh medium school. I speak Welsh with all my family. My mum was born in Cardiff, but grew up in Carmarthen, and then she has family in Aberystwyth and kind of West Wales. And my granddad came to Cardiff from West Wales to work in the steelworks.
Oh, interesting.
He was a farmer's son. He was the youngest of the family. So he got the motorbike, met my grandmother, and moved to Cardiff.
Oh, that's cool. So they raised you speaking it as a first language.
Yes.
Yeah. But I assume you spoke it alongside English as well.
Growing up in Cardiff, you're always going to grow up bilingually. And even though I went to Welsh speaking school, I'd say I was in the minority. So probably in, I think 30% of the school were from Welsh speaking families. And the others, you know, didn't speak Welsh with their parents, but spoke Welsh in school.
I think that's so cool to keep the language alive. And I've really enjoyed learning more about it through these mini series, because it feels like a language that's sort of flown under the radar internationally until recent years with the rise of streaming.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of changed a lot in terms of languages that people are exposed to across the globe. And it's awesome that Welsh has become one of them.
And especially with, I'd say, like, Welcome to Wrexham has been a massive thing. I think they did a whole episode about the history of Wales and the language, and you see that popping up. So to even have Ryan Reynolds and Rob, they've done so much for the language in terms of bringing it global attention.
Did you specifically set out to work in a bilingual setting when you moved into acting, or did that just kind of happen naturally along the way?
Yeah, it kind of happened. For me, I was quite fortunate that growing up, the BBC was kind of opposite where my school was. So when I was younger, but talking about primary school age, they would come in, and I was actually cast in a thing called Ding Dong, which is a kids kind of like Welsh learning series, and they needed two kids to come and do this thing. So I spent a summer filming this kind of kids series at the age of 10, and I got paid for it, and I was like, wow, this is incredible. My parents actually bought the first family computer with that money.
Oh, that's amazing. I love that story.
Yeah. And that was, you know, I thought, wow, this is amazing. Get paid when you're 10 years old.
It's an exciting feeling.
Yeah, very exciting. Feeling responsible for the new computer.
Yeah.
But I think for me, as a Welsh speaker in Cardiff, there were those opportunities. I was very fortunate to have, you know, the BBC opposite the school. And having had that taste when I was younger meant that I was like, oh, what is this strange world of people with booms and people miking you up and stuff? And also, I think the thing to note is that in Wales, especially Welsh language culture, it's a very celebrated thing to perform. We've got a history of, you know, singing, poetry, the Eisteddfod, and for those who don't know what the Eisteddfod it's a national festival where you get choirs competing against each other, people reciting poetry, people doing monologues, competition. And I think to be a teacher or an actor in Wales is kind of a profession to strive for, really.
Yeah.
And especially going to Glantaf, which at the time was one of two schools in Cardiff.
Schools like regular schools?
Yeah.
Or like, acting schools?
No. Like just Welsh schools. Comprehensive schools, yeah.
Okay.
Welsh language comprehensive schools. And there were actors who were older than me, Ewan Griffith, Matthew Rhys, Ewan Rheon, people who had done a lot of work, and growing up and seeing them do it gave me a sort of belief that I could also pursue a life as an actor.
For sure. And I think there are so many dramas, especially the crime dramas coming out of Wales right now, that are just so good.
Yeah.
And rightfully getting a lot of praise internationally at this stage. And having shows either in Welsh or bilingual Welsh-English productions is such a wonderful thing to share with the rest of the world, and to be in a position where we can see those shows and can get them out to so many different countries.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, we're talking about the Welsh language shows or bilingual shows getting a bit more global attention. I think it's also very much down to the success of subtitle shows. Like, we're going back to The Killing, for example. That really kicked things off. And it is funny that even though it's a native language of the United Kingdom, that people were not, in the past maybe, willing to watch something with subtitles. Whereas now, you know, with things like Money Heist on Netflix, you know, it's part and parcel of watching things today.
Absolutely. Shows like The Killing really got a big international reaction and set the stage for a lot of series that aren't in English to be appreciated by people in English-speaking countries on a scale you definitely wouldn't have seen in the past.
Yeah.
But Wales is doing this wonderfully insane thing of shooting the same shows in two separate languages at the same time. And obviously it's not for every show, but for a lot of them. I mean, shooting one show is a massive amount of work. How do you actually manage that dual language model? Is every single shot done in both Welsh and English as you go along, and then they decide how to use it later? Or do you know going into it that you'll have an all English version versus a bilingual version for international release?
So beforehand, you'll know that sometimes they, for example, with Craith and Hidden, we shot back to back. So by back to back, it means that you set up the shot, it'll be shot in Welsh, and then we'd switch language to English and then change the shot to an English, switch to Welsh. And it's great, but also it can be tiring, especially when you can't translate exactly because it kind of loses the rhythm and stuff. So there are certain differences. And let's say when you're filming at 3 a.m. or 4 a.m. and you're so tired, remember those lines, and switching can be cumbersome.
Oh, that's intense.
But it sort of works. I think personal preference is that we can shoot it as one, that they are bilingual. I think partly one of the reasons they shoot it back to back is for sales reasons, is that people to start with might not have bought the Welsh language version as itself, but would buy an English version with Welsh in it. I think now with kind of more things out there and success of certain programs, hopefully that'll change. And I feel very fortunate to be an actor at a certain time in Welsh television where there is kind of international interest, where there is a wider audience than just Welsh speakers. And I think it's a very important part of keeping the language growing, because for people to ask questions, to be like, oh, that, what is that language? And, you know, some people decide to learn Welsh because they see these things, which is an incredible thing. So, yeah, I think there's also a very important role in the growth of language as well in these programs.
100%. I'm one of those people who's been trying to learn Welsh after seeing these shows.
Oh, that's great.
I can already understand a good bit at this point, but I can't pretend to know what the words actually are in order to speak them, you know? But I have noticed that if I look away and miss the subtitles, I often still understand the general idea of what's being said, which is pretty cool. But if you asked me to repeat those words, it would be borderline gibberish, probably. I'm kind of terrified of the double L's. I cannot for the life of me make that sound. I think that's an incredibly difficult sound for people who haven't grown up with it.
We've got a lot of sh's.
Yeah, it's a work in progress. Hopefully I'll get there eventually. I'd love to learn it properly. But in the meantime, I do apologize for any horrendously bad pronunciations as we talk.
No, spot on.
Questionable attempts at Welsh aside, you trained as an actor in London, right?
Yes, I went to the Guildhall School of Music and Drama.
And that was a big turning point for you, wasn't it? Because it gave you this realistic path to becoming an actor and made the whole dream more viable.
Yeah.
But I assume it was a big change then, since your training would have been all in English.
Oh, yeah, So it was quite a culture shock for me because, you know, I come from Wales, and basically it was a small year of about 30 people from completely different backgrounds to me. And bear in mind that all of my education up to that point was through the Welsh language. So it did take some time to kind of get used to it. But yeah, I loved my time there. And I think it was very formative. It was, you know, me leaving the nest, being at a drama school that my acting heroes had studied at. Rhys Ifans went to Guildhall, Daniel Evans went to Guildhall. Then you've got people like Daniel Craig, James Bond himself. So I felt it was a very exciting place to be. Although I lived in the Barbican because they had student halls there. And if you've ever been to the Barbican, it's a very busy place in the week. You've got a lot of office workers, and then on the weekend, it's absolutely dead. It's a ghost town. So that was quite strange. That was my weekends in London. But we were so busy, we didn't really have time to kind of go out or make the most of London. And in terms of formative years, I think it really taught me discipline. I was at an institution where the craft was prized. It was drilled into us, you know, hours and hours of, if you do the work, there'll be a payoff. And that is something I've tried to kind of keep with me. And it was very, very technical stuff. The voice department was fantastic, led by Patsy Rodenberg, who's like a world-renowned voice coach. But the thing that was brilliant about Guildhall at the time was that all the teachers had worked with each other for about 30 years. So these teachers had also seen all these famous names, faces that growing up you admired, and they'd kind of taught them as well. So there was a sense of legacy with them. Although it did kind of elevate them to a point that you were kind of often scared to, basically had to learn to find your voice. And that was also part of the journey. And especially for me then, as a Welsh speaker in London. But I enjoyed the adventure.
I feel like I had a similar experience in film school. I went to NYU, so as you can imagine, there were a lot of people there who are children of very successful people in the industry.
Yeah.
And one of the guys in my class was the son of a major Hollywood producer. And, you know, in certain classes, they give you assignments to write and direct short films that cover certain subjects or that are done in specific styles. Mm. And this guy came in one time with a full-fledged mini action film. And I mean an action film. He had actors dual-wielding machine guns and pistols.
No way.
The whole dolly on the track circling around, because his dad produces those kinds of films. And we were just like, what are you doing? This is a student film. What is going on? Everybody else's were very kind of introspective and artistic. And his was just something you'd see at the local movie theater, except 10 minutes long. It was wild. So that could definitely be a little overwhelming, and there's this pressure to keep up. But like you said, you just have to find your own way, your own voice, whether acting or directing.
Yeah.
But still, getting that training is important. And you mentioned that at Guildhall, they really focused on the craft, which I love, because at least in the US, and it is a very different culture here, a very different industry, but there seems to be a lot less of a focus on that. And something I personally really appreciate about British film and TV is that emphasis on not just getting up there and doing the lines, but really creating a character that takes you outside of yourself. So focusing on that as a student is a great way to jump into it. Is there something you learned at Guildhall that's particularly stuck with you over the years?
Yeah, I think there was a big emphasis on text, on the writer, and to respect the writer and the writing. So within that, a writer's placed a comma in a certain place for a certain reason. And to honour that, I think it's very easy, especially with television. Often actors become writers themselves and will go away and change the script. And sometimes, you know, that is, if that's collaborative with the director, that's fine. Or maybe the writer's even on set, which is even better. But what that textual work gave me was the ability to study a text. And from that, essentially, accessing the imagination. I think imagination is the most important thing. And you can feed the imagination through the body, through the voice. And another thing also was our movement teacher always used to say, hold on tightly, let go lightly.
Oh, I like that.
So that's kind of stuck with me because it's to hold an idea, be passionate about a thought or idea and bring it, present it, but also be completely ready to let go of it. And I kind of apply that to bringing your ideas to set, but be ready to be working with other people who will bring their own ideas. And they might work, they might kind of connect, but they might not. So you have to be ready to let go of what you've brought in and to feed off the other person.
Honestly, that's epic advice. More people could stand to work that way. Again, maybe it's just different creative cultures, but at least here, writers are generally very undervalued. Obviously, as a writer, I take personal offense to that. Even though we're the ones inventing concepts, characters, stories, entire universes, writers are so often, especially in film, seen as the lowest rung in the creative process, which is something we've been fighting against for ages because literally nothing would happen without us.
Yeah.
So that respect for the text, for the writing, is really nice. And it probably plays a role in why you guys generally have better performances. Now, I know you said you started out acting with that small project as a kid, but after going through Guildhall and formally training and going out into the world in pursuit of an actual career in acting, was there a particular project where you felt like, okay, I'm not just training anymore. I'm not just getting a feel for it or testing the waters. I am a professional actor now. Was there a notable project where you suddenly felt that click?
Yeah, definitely. I think just going back to when I graduated, graduating from any drama school is a strange time because it's like you're at the races and they go, go. And people suddenly get a massive job and they're in something huge on television or someone gets a stage job working with like the best director. And you have to kind of bide your time. And coming out of drama school, I did one episode of Doctors. I don't know if you know what Doctors is.
I've heard of it, but I don't think I've seen it. I don't know how available it is here.
I've got a feeling they've stopped it now, but it's a daytime soap about doctors. And I had my first TV job out of drama school on that. And I think it could possibly be one of the worst pieces of acting that's ever been seen on television. I had no idea what I was doing. And it was so quick because obviously it's a daytime soap.
Right.
And I had to have a panic attack in the scene. And then I did it and the director was like, moving on. And I was like, oh my God, that is forevermore out there. And I think it is on YouTube.
Oh my God, I must see this. I will track it down.
But then moving into the first job that kind of made me feel a part of the industry, there was a program called 35 Diwrnod, which means 35 days.
Oh, yes.
And it was all set around a murder, and then it goes back 35 days, and you slowly figure out what actually happened. It was the first time where I felt, oh, actually, no, there's a place for me in this industry, whether that is just in Wales or not. There is definitely a place for me, and I've got an opportunity to get my teeth into a character. And it was 8 one-hour episodes, which is an incredible experience to have. I was probably like 23, 24, but I was also learning on the job because we didn't do much television in drama school. So I think we had like 1 week of television. The rest was kind of stagecraft, but I had the best time. It helped that I was plot spoiler, but I might have something to do with the murder at the end. So that was
interesting. I have seen it.
So you have seen it.
I was actually going to say your character did a good job of making me feel bad for him half the time and then just feeling like, okay, back off, dude, what are you doing?
Yeah.
The rest of the time. Because he's not handling things well at all. No. He's an absolute disaster.
No, definitely not him.
He's not necessarily a bad guy, though. And you definitely have played some morally gray and outright evil characters.
Yeah, nasty people.
Very. Which, I guess, going back to the craft of it, do you approach those types of characters thinking, this is a bad person and I'm going to play it that way, play up the fact that he's a villain or deeply damaged? Or do you fully put yourself into their mind and play it from the perspective that they believe they're justified in what they're doing, or they're not evil, or they don't care that they're evil?
100%, you have to find the heart. You have to find who is the human, who is the person, and why are they doing that? What are they trying to achieve? And then if they're not achieving it, why are they doing these things? Or sometimes you'll just, for example, like the Feast, someone might just be morally corrupt, but you can't play that. So you have to play scene by scene, again, going back to the text. I try and mine the text. I try and read the text as often as I can. I have to just absorb it. I'm basically just feeding the imagination as much as possible before getting onto set. But then also finding why, in terms of these characters, the darker characters, creating a backstory if it's not there. Why would they do this? What has driven them to that point? And often it's, what is the child inside them? And why is that child damaged? And just go from there.
I know it varies from one character to the next, obviously, but for a character like Simon Firth in Barriai, my pronunciation.
No, that was perfect. Perfect. I was Welsh there.
Well, if you've got the language, why not use it, right? I actually have to tell you, with that show, I had the Welsh subtitles for it as well as the English ones. And I thought, this will be a clever way to get some extra practice, right? I'll just put on the Welsh subs and follow along to see what words they're actually using. Brilliant. Didn't work at all. Did not work at all. The sounds weren't matching up to anything I saw on the screen. I genuinely cannot wrap my mind around those pronunciations. But I did find the bilingual nature of that show so fascinating, because it wasn't just going back and forth between languages based on characters. In that case, it was fully Wenglish. People were alternating between Welsh and English, even in the same sentences.
Yeah, that also reflects kind of day-to-day usage, because, you know, you try your best to speak Welsh all the time perfectly. But even in, like, for example, Barriai is set in North Wales. So in those North Walian communities, you use a bit of English here and there. So again, we're talking about not doing a back-to-back, doing it just as a bilingual version. That is a perfect example of that.
I especially love that as a New Yorker, because we have this similar blend of Spanish and English spoken in exactly the same way. So it's fascinating to me to see the same being done in Welsh and English. And in such a gritty, raw setting like a prison, it feels very close to home in a way. But whichever language Simon was speaking, he was quite morally gray. He's not exactly a criminal, but he's definitely a shady tool and definitely an antagonist. Do you look at that character and feel he's someone who's just doing his job the best he can, even if he takes some questionable steps in the process? Or do you acknowledge that he crossed the line and got what he deserved from the inmates and his colleagues?
With that particular role, I was actually given a little bit of text from Kieran Griffith, who wrote Barriai. And in it was a little biography about Simon, basically about him growing up. And it was a key bit of information that is never mentioned in the series. But for me as an actor, it was gold dust. And it basically explains how he goes home and he's crying as a child, and he says to his dad that he's being bullied, and his dad just slaps him across the face, and the fact that he can't believe that he's got a snitch for a son.
Oh, wow.
And then it says that his dad is in and out of prison. So basically, just that bit of information gave me a drive as to why does Simon Firth need to control these prisoners. Essentially, it's a reflection of being able to control his dad. Basically a lot of daddy issues. So from that point then, you kind of explore daddy issues, and there's a great podcast called The Daddy Issue Podcast, which I kind of mind delved into that. And then he's got to a point where he wants praise, the praise that he never got from his dad. So climbing the ladder quickly, as he's done, he will do that in any way possible, even if that means breaking all the rules. You do feel sorry for the characters that you play. So I feel sorry that he ends up the way he does, but I'm not sure other people would agree with that.
I'm torn, honestly. I did feel for him when one particular thing happened, because it was just so nasty.
Yeah.
But he was also behaving like a total tool. So ultimately, on his own head, be it, literally.
Yeah.
It's a great show, though. Obviously, it had a successful first season, and then you stepped in for season two. Was that difficult to come onto a set where there's already this very established dynamic? And not only that, but you're also stepping in this position of authority and bossing everyone else around from the moment you arrive. Was that at all daunting to do, given how tight-knit the cast and crew must have been by that point?
I think with this particular job, Sean, the actor, there were definitely nerves there, because I was like, you know, I've really enjoyed Series 1, and I'm really excited to join the story and the family and the gang. But also, he's such an insular character. He doesn't really even get along with his co-workers. So fortunately for me, again, as Sean, the actor, we shot all the stuff in the office with the other prison officers first, which meant that I hadn't actually met any of the actors who were playing the prisoners, or hadn't even shot anything on the prison wing, which meant that I had a couple of days where I owned the office. I started to own the space. And I actually, as Sean, would go in onto the prison wing set, because it was all in a studio, and I would just spend some time there. And gradually, by maybe day three, and then we were into the wing, I felt like I owned the place. And then I kind of really felt the challenge of, because all of a sudden, when that empty set is full of actors and supporting artists, all in a prison setting, I felt ready for the challenge. I felt like it was me against them, and I kind of enjoyed that.
I love that.
You have to lean into the enjoyment of it a bit.
And it was such a big cast for that one too. There were just so many people on set and on camera all the time.
But that was the brilliant thing about it, was that it really felt like a stage production, because it was the same company coming in every day. You were going into work. It was essentially a 9-to-5 thing, or 7-to-6, whatever. And then you'd be a part of a company, and you'd watch the scenes, then you'd be jump in and do your scenes. So it really felt kind of, yeah, like a stage production, and that sense of company.
Ah, that had to be so much fun.
Again, going back to the drama school, there was a big emphasis on ensemble, and I loved that. And I love the energy that I get off other people working together, and also just watching great work, watching other people do great work. Because often on set, you're whisked away and you don't get to see much stuff. So actually to be able to hang around and watch everyone else's work was great.
That collaborative creative energy is something I've always loved too, whether on stage or on screen. With that background in theater, do you see yourself maybe jumping back into stage work at some point? Or are you just happy on camera these days?
I am very happy on camera. Every time I'm on set, I'm trying to learn something new. I'm always kind of watching, observing other people's jobs. And the craft of television is still something that really interests me. But I would love to do some more stage work. It's been a while, so I think it's about time that I do a return.
Oh, I'd love to see that. I actually heard you talking about Barayai when you first joined it, saying that it was very different from anything you'd seen before, at least on Welsh television. What was it that stood out to you about the show?
Yeah, I think going back to that feeling of watching a world in one place, that's all set in one place, it's in that prison. Even our series, I don't think we really went outside, apart from, I think in Series 1 you see a couple of scenes in people's houses, but I think there was such a detailed world within that, and they'd really gone to lengths to make that world as detailed as possible. For example, we went to visit a prison, and we were allowed in on the wings with prisoners, with, you know, people who'd done horrendous things. And that was a challenge for just me as Sean. It was, you just don't want to end up in those spaces. But as a challenge, every instinct in my body wanted to put my hands in my pocket. You got people shouting off the top. You got people kind of asking what you're doing. But also very interested. But also, yeah, every instinct was to close up. But because of the character I was playing, I literally made it a thing for me to keep my hands out of my pocket and just try and be as open, because this is how it would feel for Simon Firth. But he would be ruling the roost. So that was something I really tried to bring into that kind of freedom of just knowing that at the end of the day, I can also leave this. And that's power in itself, whereas other people can't.
Well, it was a great result. I love the character. And you had that swagger and smarmy attitude down so well, which was very effective and made him a really fun antagonist.
That's also down to the director, Griff Rowland. I think he really allowed, in terms of Simon, he allowed me to be quite playful. I was doing things, just trying things. And it was also very quick, so you'd only get maybe like 2 or 3 takes on it. But I had complete trust in Griff. And from that, you can just try stuff and have some fun, even with some of the horrible stuff. Dealing with very serious matters, but a very playful set, if that makes sense.
Would that involve taking the autistic inmate's headphones and putting them on your own head in the smuggest way imaginable? Because I thought that was such a great touch. And I'm assuming that was improvised.
Yeah, that was me. That wasn't in the script, because I literally thought, what would be the worst thing that he could do in this moment? It would be to wear those headphones.
It was so good because it was wrong in this gleefully sadistic way. That was a great choice.
Thank you.
Not all your characters are so mean, though. Vaughn and Kreith, or Hidden for English speakers, was so likable. Just a really nice guy, really good detective. We can forgive his dramatic home life in the first two seasons. He just needed to grow up and get his act together a bit. But getting to play that role and getting to be immersed in such an intense character-driven series like that for 3 years seems like such a great job. Did you know that you'd be doing that one for several seasons, or was it just meant to be a single season that then evolved because it got such a good response?
Yeah, I think there was always the potential for more, but I guess you have to wait until the numbers come out and how many people watch it. And so you just never know. I didn't expect that there'd be more than one. I hoped there would be, but it was a bit of a gift, really, to be able to do that. And very formative years, you know, it's my late 20s going into my 30s, and you're working with the same people. The testament to Kreith was that the crew would come back, and to see, you know, they've done series one and two, but they wanted to come back and do series three, which shows that we had a good team, you had a good time, and there was a real sense of family on that job. And also, like, just as an actor, it's so exciting to be able to have the opportunity to develop a character. And also, you're not going to know where it's going to go. That's why, like, whenever scripts arrive, you just read through as quick as possible.
Like, what's next? What's happening this time?
Yeah.
Personally, I loved the first season so much that I was a bit nervous I'd be let down as it continued. But they really managed to keep that scar theme going and explore the concept of how trauma defines these characters and how those childhood scars manifest and make them who they are, which was just riveting. But Vaughn was there throughout, and he grows up a lot over the course of the show. So did you find that your perspective on the character changed as you went along? You mentioned that you're always learning, always picking things up, and I've never played a character for 3 years in a row, so I'm curious if you learned anything from how the character evolved over time, and if it maybe changed your understanding of how to develop a role long term.
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, by series two, you know enough about the character to understand how they'd react to certain things. The beautiful thing was with the fantastic Sian Rhys-Williams, we were also friends. So the more our friendship grew, it kind of coincided with the journey of the characters. And then even with that, then comes an understanding of how to respond to other characters and when the other character clearly needs something, and there's a part of you that's kind of like sharing that.
Definitely. And I loved seeing your relationship with Sian in the show, because your real life friendship very much came across in your characters, and it was such a lovely sibling-esque dynamic.
Yeah, you kind of develop this symbiotic understanding. And also there's something quite, you know, thinking back, it's quite cool when you're just driving into question a suspect, and even just like the act of leaving the car and closing the door and walking up to that front door. We've done it a few times. There's just like, we're just in sync, if that makes sense. But at the end of the day, you know, it is all things come to an end. And that was the beautiful thing about Kreith, is that I learned a lot on that job. I learned a lot watching Sian. I learned a lot about myself in terms of how to sustain a character long term. Even when there are times where I felt that Vaughn was feeding other storylines, but that was also kind of fine because his character is sympathetic and he is there and he does have a big heart, and what he provides Caddy is an ear to listen or a shoulder to cry on. So yeah, very, very happy memories filming Kreith. And North Wales is such a beautiful place, like the scenery itself. I was so lucky to be able to go to all these incredible locations.
Beautiful scenery. And they used it so well as a backdrop for the story too.
But it's a funny thing, talking about Kreith, because you might notice that a lot of people in series one was also in Hinterland in episode
yes.
one of series three. So, for example, Gwyneth Keyworth, Sian was also in that, I was in that. And I was lucky to get cast in that, which actually, that was the team that made Hidden. So Gareth Bryn directed it, Ed Talvan produced it. So there was a definite sense of dominoes to get that part. And also, actually, we'll go back even further. My agent at the time, I'd heard that this Hinterland was happening. And I think I graduated around when it started. So it was something I'd always desperate to be in. And then the third series was starting and some of my friends were getting auditions for it and they were going to Cardiff to meet the director. And I kept asking my agent, I was like, can I be seen for it? And they were like, sorry, we can't. It's just, you can't be seen for it. They're not sure if you're right for it. And then I was like, no, please, can you just like make sure? And then I ended up, I actually went to Louise Cross, the casting director's house, to audition for her. And I think it kind of felt a bit like a vetting process, if I was kind of worthy or not. And I remember doing it and we did the scene and she was like, what are you doing tomorrow? And I knew because my friends were already going to Cardiff to meet the director. So I was like, I'm free. And then I went to Cardiff, auditioned for the part, got the job. So yeah, if I hadn't maybe pushed my agent back in that first instance, maybe none of that would have happened.
Wow. I think that's a great example of why going into any creative industry, one of the first things you need to learn is how to advocate for yourself and push for things that you believe in or that you're passionate about instead of hoping someone else will do it for you. But your character conveyed so much emotion with minimal dialogue, just through your movements, your expressions. It was heartbreaking. And you showed so much internal pain without actually saying it out loud, which I always love to see.
That character was interesting because he's very religious. He was studying theology and he had a higher sense of purpose, really. But within that, he'd also committed an act that his mum tries to cover up and protect him from the truth, from the police. So yeah, it was a very interesting thing because those the kind of worlds colliding, and that was also very much a turning point, I think, in my career to be a part of that show, because I'd always admired, you know, the actors in that, and it was very much one of the big shows out of Wales at the time.
Yeah, nice.
What's really funny is that my ID card for Vaughan for 3 series was a picture of me in the first read-through of series 1, just very happy to be there, just as Sean with a leather jacket. And they just took my head from that, really smiling, and put it on a police ID card. And I've still got that, actually.
Oh, I love stuff like that. I love those little touches that people throw in that most people don't even know about watching it. But you just have those little memories from being part of it.
Yeah.
That's great. When you're preparing for a character, how much work do you do beforehand versus seeing what the director has to say or seeing how you end up playing off the rest of the cast in the moment once you get to rehearsals or actual shooting? Like, how much thought do you put into it ahead of time?
Imagination is always the big thing for me. So whatever the subject is, I will try and kind of listen to podcasts about that, read some books, things that, for example, like with Barry, I read Strange Ways by Neil Samworth. He's a prison officer in Strange Ways. And kind of immersing myself to then be able to imagine myself in that, also the prison visit. And from that, there's a lot of mention of kind of corrupt officers and things, and there's an element of feeling above the law, feeling invincible. And then once you're into costume, you've got the lapels, you've got Simon Firth's got the glasses, and it's just how you interact then with the space. How do you sit in the seat and the set in the office? How would you, for example, make your coffee? I decided that he would drink an espresso shot in an espresso cup. I try and pack my brain with as many things as possible, things that could be useful, things that couldn't. So that hopefully when you're on set then, an idea will spring into your mind. And another factor then is fighting fear, I guess. Fear is also kind of the killer of inspiration, and trying to kind of push yourself to be bold and just to do it and see what happens.
For sure. I think for me, one of the toughest things about acting was always pushing through that fear to take a chance and try something, knowing that it could be great or people could be like, what do you think you're doing? But for a role like The Feast, that whole film is so driven by visuals and by the atmosphere. And of course, there's dialogue, but it's almost secondary compared to the way the characters have to express themselves just by inhabiting the scene. Does that require a different type of preparation for you to portray the character primarily through expressions and movements in that way? Because we as the viewers don't know what's wrong with Gwyrth until the end.
Yeah.
And it's almost said in passing in such an intense moment. You could almost miss it if you look away, but we do know that something is wrong. And that comes across very clearly from your very first scene.
Yeah, with that, I remember I didn't have much time to prepare. I think it was probably like 3 weeks before we started shooting when I got the job. What I did know was that, I'm a very hairy Welshman. So what I did know and what was arranged for me was to wax my body.
Oh, and wow.
So obviously there's a scene, I think you see my bum at one point, and they had to kind of wax everything in the lower half. And that was like... But I am very hairy. They're like, don't worry, we won't wax the top. We'll just shave every day. I was like, no, if we do one half, I think you should do the other because I am very hairy. They're like, no, it's fine. And then we get to set on the first day, and then they're literally like, okay, so we're gonna shave your chest. And then by the second day, it essentially grown back. It was like, so, and by the end of shoot, there was just a rash on my chest.
Oh, that's terrible.
And then my lower half was so slick. But in terms of preparation for that, so I kind of envisioned a snake, a sort of viper, someone who's still, someone who has the ability to pounce when he needs to, but doesn't expend too much energy. I also, from the text, from the story, there's a lot of business going around. So I knew there'd be a lot of movement and chaos from other people. So within that, there was a sense of stillness, of purpose, and hopefully a threat that would come from him. And then, for example, thinking about the kind of the serpent, the first time you see me, I'm putting on that weird cycling outfit, and you see my kind of shaved chest and the waxed lower half, and I'm putting something on my arm, like a sort of a band on my arm, and doing that, I kind of lent in, had this image of a bull breathing, and it was in his own little world, just kind of like something animalistic about putting this on. So again, this is all imagination stuff. This probably doesn't show, but hopefully there's like an essence of it.
The vibe shows for sure. Maybe not every single thought that's going through your head, but it absolutely conveys the tone and the intentions and gives the character life and a distinct feel. Like in that scene, I mean, that outfit was wild. And I was coming to that film right after Krythe, so I didn't know you were in it and just about did a double take. Like, oh, wait, he looks familiar. Is that Vaughn? No, it can't be. What is he wearing? He looks all wrong. But yeah, it definitely does come across. And I love that you mentioned that feeling of stillness, because it's not something I would have been consciously aware of. But there was a very clear contrast between the chaos of the other characters and yours. It's very noticeable. And hearing you describe it as snake-like is such a great image, because that's exactly what the performance felt like. It was so unsettling and did such a good job of conveying that sense of wrongness and the fact that you don't know why, but you know he's bad. I really enjoyed that. Although the waxing sounds horrible.
Yeah, it was horrible.
The joys of becoming different people. While we're on the subject of folk horror, especially Welsh folk horror, I'd love to give a little shout out to a short film you did recently, Nothing But You and Me, or in Welsh, Dim Ond Ti a Mi.
Perfeth. Well done. Is that... yeah, spot on.
Dim All right, well, me. That didn't have any double L's, so that's no. easier. But it's currently on BBC iPlayer, so to anyone listening, check it out if you want a creepy little short film. I really enjoyed it. It's only 15 minutes long. So simple in setting and all, but it did a great job of capturing that old world folk horror dread. Though, given you normally do long form TV, is it very different to step into a short film where everything is so condensed and you have to convey your character's personality and motivation so fast? Was that a difficult adjustment or not so much? Character's character.
It was kind of the same thing. I think the difference is that it's a more collaborative process, maybe, because everyone's kind of making it, it's a very small budget, and for that reason you do have a sense of ownership over it, because you can kind of get involved a bit more, you can talk to the cameraman, you can talk to the director a bit more. But also it's a lot of fun in terms of the arc of the character. It's basically the same process, but just it concludes much quicker, and you've got a couple of scenes to be more concise. But I think Griff Lynch, who directed it, did a fantastic job, and he kindly took me for top-up driving lessons, because living in London, you don't need to drive. And I passed my test for Hidden Series 1, thinking that every detective needs to turn up to a crime scene in a car. And then they said to me, oh, you've just passed the test. I was like, yeah. And then they said, oh, we can't get insurance, so we'll get a double. So basically, Series 1, there's me not driving. And then Series 2, they're literally like, oh, you can drive, can't you? I was like, yeah, but I haven't been in a car since my test, my 1 week crash course test. So when it came to Dim Ond Ti a Mi, Griff kindly took me out for some lessons. But you do see me driving on camera, which is the important thing.
That's amazing. I relate so much as a New Yorker. Even outside of New York, I've always lived in big cities where you have no need for a car, and it's just buses and trains 24/7. So I'm there with you. I'm glad you finally got to drive for a minute in a short film. When I've made shorts, I think one of the questions I run into from friends who aren't involved in the arts is, why bother? Or the attitude that they're not real movies. But I think shorts have so much to offer in their own way. As someone who's interested in the art of filmmaking, what value would you say they have?
I think they've got a very important purpose, because, for example, like, you could do a sci-fi as a short film, whereas it would be much harder to get funding for it to be made into a TV drama. So you can play with genres. You can also, I think for a director, it's an opportunity to experiment with style, not necessarily a safe space, because obviously you want the film to do well. But yeah, I think short films are to be celebrated just for the variety of creative options available. And also people do, there are bursaries, there are budgets, there are schemes that allow people to do this. And just, there's nothing better than sitting in a short film festival, because you see all these different incredible ideas from writers, directors, and they're all so different, Whereas in TV, often, you know, there's a couple of Welsh detective dramas out there.
Just a few.
Just a few. But there's, you know, a short film, you can really push the boat out and do something special.
One of the scariest films I've ever seen in terms of having a real psychological impact on me was a 10-minute Irish movie called The Ten Steps.
Oh, wow.
Which still makes my stomach twist a bit when I think about it, because I just found the idea so unsettling. It's so simple, super low budget, just a young girl on a phone with her dad having an increasingly intense panic attack as she forces herself to walk down to the basement with a candle after the power goes out, with local legend claiming the devil appeared there. Afterwards, when the credits were rolling, no one spoke or moved. We all just stared at the screen in horror. Yeah. It was that effective.
That's amazing.
So to me, when people ask about the value of short films, that's my answer. If they can have an effect, if they can get a reaction out of you, then they've done their job, no matter the length. And Demonti Amid definitely got a reaction from me. As the credits rolled, you really feel like, ew. It was very unsettling and did a good job of building up that atmosphere.
Yeah.
Now, having done both film and television from the other side of the camera, to me, they're quite different mediums from a technical and logistics perspective. But from an acting standpoint, is there any difference in your experience? Are there any aspects of the job that you feel are unique to each medium, or that you really enjoy about one and don't quite get from the other?
I do enjoy the fact that with a film, you know the arc of the character. You've read the script. You know what your character's role is, and you know from A to B. Whereas in television, often you don't know. And sometimes you're hoping for a better story. As an actor, you might be like, oh, I wish I'm hoping for a better storyline. Whereas there's something satisfying about knowing everything about it. You've read the whole script, you know the whole story. But then when it comes to actually the doing of it, I think they're very similar. The biggest difference is often that on a film, depending how big the role is, but the director hasn't got as much time for you, so because they're juggling so many different things. And especially thinking about some of the bigger sets I've been on, that has been the main thing of watching a director having to deal with a lot of actors at the same time. But yeah, it's still storytelling, and it's very exciting to be a part of that in any sort of form, really.
I imagine a show like Steel Town Murders had a strong feeling of community, given it was such a powerful local story and based on real crimes in Wales. And my impression was that you all took that responsibility pretty seriously. Plus, I really loved the 70s aesthetic in the flashbacks. It was so distinct, and I know it was a very serious subject, but most of your work is set present day. So it had to be fun diving into the past like that. What was your favorite part of that shoot?
Growing sideburns.
Oh, those were real?
They're real sideburns. Yeah.
Very nice.
Scott Arthur plays the other character. He had fake sideburns, so I felt very proud of mine. But yeah, just in terms of the set and the costumes and things, it made me really think. I felt like my granddad, which is not a bad thing, being able to empathise. But also it felt very Welsh, and it felt very Welsh of that period. And obviously we're dealing with such a, you know, it's such a sad story, and it's a true story. So you're also having to be very sensitive to the fact that there are still people in the community that you're filming in who remember the case, who remember the victims even sometimes.
So that's something they were aware of.
Yeah.
They went into it with that in mind. That's good to hear, because they don't always.
They don't always, no.
Well, I love the look and feel of it. The color tones and set design, all those creative choices, they really came together to make it feel so immersive. And I imagine it was even more so on set.
Yeah, even the police station, it was like an exact replica of the police station, which is amazing, but it was very narrow, and it kind of really worked for those big scenes where we're having the briefings, where everyone's kind of packed in together. But obviously at that time, everyone were men. So there was a real sense of boys on the job, which then I think thematically with what happened to the girls, I think that's one of the reasons why possibly they missed the perpetrator in the first place, because there was that kind of, you know, immediate sense of, oh, well, they were doing something dodgy because they're responsible for what happened to them. Mm. But also within that the job that was dealing with very serious issues and very kind of traumatic events, it was a lot of fun to film. In a way, just in terms of the camaraderie of actors on set, Mark Evans is a fantastic director, and there's a sense of, you get a feeling of like rock and roll with him. He loves music as well, and his music is a big part of that show, signifying the period.
Right.
And Mark as a director really kind of makes you feel good. I think he makes everyone feel good on set, which kind of creates a good vibe. Especially when you're dealing with dark subjects.
True. The more serious the subject, the nicer it is to have someone with a positive, laid-back vibe running the show to balance out that heavier material. It was great work all around. And the 70s is such a great decade for storytelling and visuals in general. But if you could choose any other time period to do a film or TV series in, what would it be?
I kind of lived the dream, really, when I was doing Britannia, because I grew up, like, my dad used to tell us about Caradog, Craticus, and about the Celts. And then for that job, it was, you know, I had a long wig, I had like a face tattoo, and I was like, this is amazing. But a funny story about that job was that it was incredible to have, that was a big set. There was things like that. We were having that meeting in one of the huts, and there was a huge Irish wolfhound sat behind us. And the kind of, we went to have this meeting with like the fire and the smoke. But every time they said action, this Irish wolfhound hated the smoke and the clapper and just darted out. So sitting cross-legged with this huge thing just like darting past me, making me jump every take. And then at the end of that job, I actually got food poisoning.
So there's this whole
kind of like ambush scene, which was really cool to shoot because I had all these arrows flying in on invisible wire. But I don't really remember much of it because I was so ill. I had food poisoning or norovirus or something, and my whole attention was on not needing to go to the toilet.
Oh no, that's awful. Oh my God. Oh, that's the worst.
But that was the dream. I've always wanted to play a Celt. I would also love to, again, to go historical, to play, if they were to do some like a film about, or a TV series about the Mabinogi, which is the famous Welsh myths.
Oh, I don't think I know those.
They've got four tales and they're really epic. They're kind of a lot of fantasy. It's about like hunting a wild boar that's got a scissors between its horns.
And very
cool. And has to kind of bring back the scissors in order to win the king's daughter. And then there's another one about a giant who kind of has this epic battle in Ireland with this cauldron that brings the soldiers back to life, and there's a huge battle. There are so many fantastical stories that it's just begging to be made into some sort of series.
That sounds amazing. Sorry, what's it called again?
They're called The Mabinogi.
Need to add it to the list. In my opinion, any type of mythology is an incredible base for good quality filmmaking if it's in the right hands. Unfortunately, it often isn't, but we can hope.
Yeah, exactly.
To wrap things up here, I don't want to put you on the spot.
Okay.
But I heard you describe being on set as being like on a pirate ship.
Yeah.
If you can't answer this, that's totally fine. But I'd love for you to try to explain what you mean by that, because I kind of get it. And it stuck with me because I thought it was such a great, unique description. So with that in mind, what is your favorite part of being in this job or being on any project?
I'll go back to the pirate ship analogy. Everybody on set has a very independent spirit, and it's a really interesting energy to be around. And then also everyone's got their own job that they are experts in, that nobody else on that set can do as good as them. But it requires everyone to work together to make this thing, and to actually feel like, I'm very conscious of this, and I try to be as inclusive as possible with crew, because I know a lot of actors kind of will just ram home the fact that they are actors and they have a trailer and they just stay in the trailer. And for me, it's such a collaborative thing to create something for television, and every aspect of it fascinates me. Every job that everyone does fascinates me, and I just love the fact that you can just stand on set and look around and watch all these little cogs work away. And then going back to that, everyone's got that independent spirit. Like, someone will get told, oh, you need to do this differently from a different department, then they're like, oh, they don't know, do they? And this, but it all works, and everyone is a family, everyone's a team. And yeah, I just think it's a special thing to be a part of. I'm very fortunate, because at the end of the day, we bring it to life as actors, but there's so much happening underneath that, and beforehand, months in advance in preparation, and then months after we finished it and the edit, and we're just a very small cog in it, a very important cog in it. But yeah, I enjoy being a part of that creative ball.
It's wonderful to hear you say that, because to hear actors talk about the process as a collaborative one, and to have an appreciation for and interest in the work that everyone else is doing in making these productions happen and bringing these shows to life. Because realistically, nothing would get made without that collaborative spirit. So that's a great attitude and a really nice thing to hear you say. I love that. And on that note, I think we'll close here. I'm really excited to see what you're going to do going forward, because you've played a lot of memorable characters so far, and I hope there's a lot more to come. I will definitely be keeping an eye out.
Diolch yn fawr.
Thank you so much, Sean. This has been a lot of fun. I can't wait to see what comes next.
Diolch.
Sean Alan Davis, really nice guy, lovely actor. Again, I've included links to trailers and streaming sites for some of his work in the description, and I very much recommend checking them out, especially if you like crime dramas, but also horror, history, even fantasy, and hopefully we'll be seeing a lot more from him soon. Thank you so much for listening to The Art of Imagination, and I'll see you next time.